The UN has announced that there are now 2 million Syrian refugees in the region. The United Kingdom is already the second largest donor, supporting over 900,000 Syrians, and we will do more. The President of the Syrian National Coalition will visit London on Thursday, when we will discuss further support to save lives, promote political dialogue in Syria, and advance the holding of a second Geneva conference. We support a strong international response to the use of chemical weapons in Syria, while of course fully respecting the views of this House.
Sarah Newton.
Mr. Speaker, I do not believe that the people of Britain want the people of Syria to feel abandoned in their hour of need. Will my right honourable friend, who has shown such a lead, continue to work with partners in providing humanitarian aid to help alleviate the dreadful suffering that we see in Syria? And will he consider that humanitarian response, including protection against future use of chemical weapons?
Yes, my honourable friend is absolutely right. The UK's total funding for humanitarian purposes in Syria and the region is now £348 million. This is the largest total sum the UK has ever committed to a single crisis, ever. And UK aid is funding food now for over 280,000 people a month, drinking water for almost 1 million people. My own friend mentions protection, and the package of chemical weapons protective equipment I laid before the House just before the summer break has now arrived in the region. This includes 5,000 escape hoods, detector paper, and a stock of nerve agent pre-treatment tablets.
John Glenn.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Given this enormous commitment to aid, would the Foreign Secretary like to applaud the efforts of others, such as Michael Bates from The Other Place, who just last weekend completed a 518-mile walk from London to Derry in aid of Syria's children, raising over £35,000 for the cause? Doesn't this record of aid and diplomacy of this government and the people in it suggest that the government's willingness to consider military action was done reluctantly and alongside an enormous commitment?
Order. I don't wish to be discourteous, but we must make progress. Much pithier. Foreign Secretary.
To be brief, Mr. Speaker, yes, I join my honourable friend in saluting the work and example set by our noble friend Lord Bates, as we should refer to him in this House. And that is another example of the generosity of the British people. It is generosity that is being fully called upon for the reasons that I've described. But we will have to be prepared to do even more in the months ahead, given the immense scale now of this humanitarian crisis.
Paul McCartney.
Thank you, Speaker. It's truly regrettable that this House last week failed to vote for a motion condemning the use of chemical weapons and to back an international response to the crisis in Syria. It was an outcome neither the government nor opposition and its leader should have wanted to see. That same evening saw reports that the Assad regime firebombed a school. It seems that our inaction will possibly only embolden Assad and his forces. Can my right honourable friend assure me and this House that the government will continue to utilise diplomatic channels to push for a solution to this crisis?
Well, we absolutely will. I refer to our humanitarian work, and of course something else that we must never stop is our diplomatic efforts as well. We have promoted, as have other nations, a second conference in Geneva. The Prime Minister has discussed that with President Putin last week, as I did with my counterpart Sergei Lavrov. When the Prime Minister attends the G20 summit in St. Petersburg at the end of this week, he will, of course, have further opportunities to do so. There is still an overwhelming case for the holding of a peace conference in Geneva, and we will continue to work towards that.
What specific steps are being made to put diplomatic pressure on Russia itself?
I mentioned a moment ago, Mr. Speaker, that the conversations that we have with Russian leaders, whether they feel that as diplomatic pressure, we shall see. Russia has proved immune to what my honourable friend and I would normally regard as diplomatic pressure when it has come to votes at the UN Security Council. The Russians are committed also to bring about a Geneva peace conference, so we have to work on that common ground. But not only to bring about a peace conference, but to do it in circumstances where it has a chance of success. And that, of course, has been the most elusive thing so far.
Jack Straw.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Does the Foreign Secretary accept that the chances of success of any peace conference would greatly be enhanced if Iran was involved? And given the election of Dr. Hassan Rouhani as president, would he say what extra efforts he's been making to reach out to the Iranian government?
The chances would be enhanced, not necessarily by Iran being involved, but by Iran playing a constructive role in trying to bring about a settlement at such a peace conference. I think nearly all of us who participated in the first Geneva conference last year, where Iran was not present, came to the view that we could not even have reached the conclusion that we did on the need for a transitional government in Syria had Iran been there. So it depends on the role Iran is prepared to play. I had a conversation a few weeks ago with the outgoing Iranian foreign minister. I have offered to meet the new Iranian foreign minister during the UN General Assembly in New York, and of course we will be able to discuss these issues.
Jeremy Corbyn.
All wars have to end with a conference and a peace solution. And in response to the question just raised by my friend, the member for Blackburn, can the Foreign Secretary show a greater sense of urgency? If there's to be a peace process, it's got to involve all the neighbouring countries. It's got to involve Saudi Arabia and Iran and Russia. Can he reach out now and meet the Iranian government to try and get them involved and use the G20 as the springboard to achieve this?
I do want to reassure the Honourable Member there is no lack of urgency, either on the part of Her Majesty's government or many other governments around the world. And he will know that Secretary Kerry has applied himself very, very hard in recent months to trying to bring about the Geneva Peace Conference, along with America's partners around Europe, trying to work closely with Russia on this. The test for Iran, as I was just saying, will be whether it is really prepared to play a constructive role. Because, remember, Iran has, from all the evidence presented, been actively supporting the Syrian regime, including in the killing of so many innocent people in Syria. It hasn't played a constructive role so far, but we are prepared to talk to it.
Dame Joan Ruddock.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. What the Syrian people need is a ceasefire, not a barrage of cruise missiles. Yeah. Is the Foreign Secretary aware that the media has reported that Senator John McCain, has said that President Obama has told him that this will not just be a punishment strike, but this will be a wider military action in order to tip the balance towards the opposition? Will he dissociate himself entirely with such sentiments?
I don't believe that to be the intention of the United States. President Obama has made his purpose very clear, but in any case, he has now referred to this to the United States Congress. And so I do think we have to allow, as the U.S. administration has called for, the U.S. Congress to make its decision. We had our vote last week. The U.S. Congress will have its vote. But President Obama is very clear that any action proposed by the United States would be to deter the further use of chemical weapons. And I think we can take him at his word on that, and I am not going to criticise him for putting that forward.
Mr. Douglas Alexander.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Let me return to the diplomatic initiatives the Foreign Secretary mentioned. Will he firstly offer the House an assurance that the British government will be urging the attendance of Lakhdar Brahimi at the G20 meeting in order to facilitate a discussion that many of us would judge necessary on Syria? And secondly, would he consider the establishment of a Syrian contact group so that not just Iran but Russia and indeed the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia could, as principal sponsors of the respective sides of this conflict, be engaged in trying to find a way towards Geneva?
Well, to be clear, we expect the discussion on Syria at the G20 to be in a series of bilateral meetings. As he knows, the actual formal agenda of the G20 is set by Russia, working with the rest of the G20, is about a wide range of trading and economic issues. But Syria will dominate the bilateral meetings during the G20, and we would expect it to do so. Of course, we want Mr. Brahimi to be involved. We usually facilitate and support his involvement in all critical discussions that take place around the world on these matters. But he must remember the point about the bilateral meetings in St. Petersburg. And we continue to work with the core group of the Friends of Syria to promote dialogue in Syria, to try to bring about a peaceful settlement. Ultimately, as other honourable members have said, there has to be a political solution. And so, of course, we will continue with that work.
Mr. Speaker, I think the House will be disappointed by an admission from the Foreign Secretary that Lakhdar Brahimi apparently will not be in attendance in St. Petersburg, nor will it be on the formal agenda of the grouping of the 20 countries. Could I urge him to consider requesting the Russian government to place the issue of Syria at the top of the multilateral agenda? And secondly, does he not accept there's a fundamental difference between Friends of Syria, those only supporting the rebels, and a contact group which would have parties to both sides of the conflict?
Well, the Right Honourable General does really need to... Well, I'm sure he does understand from his past experience how these meetings are conducted. It is in bilateral meetings that Syria will be a dominant issue in St. Petersburg, and should be. And the Prime Minister will, of course, be pursuing it at every possibility and through every channel in St. Petersburg, as he has done and as I have done in the whole series of bilateral and multilateral meetings over the last few months. Our problem is not being unable to discuss these things in the international community, it is being unable to agree how we bring about a transitional government in Syria formed from government and opposition by mutual consent. And there's no shortage of venues for discussing those things, platforms for discussing those things. We have had 2.5 years of discussion on this. It is agreement that is elusive, not a forum for discussion.
Ms. Gamble.
Does my right honourable friend understand that the humanitarian problem extends not only to those who have sought refuge outside of Syria, but to the very large numbers of internally displaced persons, on whose behalf the Red Crescent is working tirelessly to seek to alleviate their suffering? Is he satisfied that proper opportunity is available to all organisations inside and outside Syria who have humanitarian objectives in mind?
My right hon. Friend asked a very important question. The answer is I'm not satisfied that all of the access is there. British aid is reaching into through NGOs, through the international agencies, into many parts of Syria. It is reaching people in all 14 governorates of Syria. So British aid is being widely distributed inside Syria as well as outside Syria. But there have often been and continue to be severe problems of humanitarian access, often not permitted by the regime, and it is another testimony to the callousness of this regime towards its own people, that not only have they killed so many tens of thousands, but they also obstruct the delivery of aid, including medical supplies, to people in their own country who desperately need it.
Robertson. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. What kind of message does it send to the rest of the world that until recently the UK Ministry of Defence was providing training and paying for the training of senior military officers from the Assad regime?
Well, I think the House knows the attitude that we have taken to the Assad regime from the beginning of these problems, at the beginning of 2011. Successive governments made diplomatic approaches to the Assad regime and were right to do so under the last Labour government and under the current government. But once these troubles began and it became clear that Assad was setting about dealing with them by trying to suppress and murder so many of his own people, our approach radically changed. And that's true of the Ministry of Defence as well as of all other departments.